are listening to Thought Vibrations, a yoga satsang. I'm Megan.
And I'm Lisa. Thanks for joining the conversation.
We're sitting across the table from one another right
I'm
now.
I'm home. I'm home.
I'm so We're happy you're united. Here. I was just recording that intro and I was like, oh, I'm like so used to kind of like looking towards the microphone or like, you know, it just, no, you're eye level with me. I can just look across the table and have this conversation.
I'm right here. So grateful.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're home. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be home.
Yeah.
Interestingly, we had recorded, so it is today, Sunday, August 13th.
Yes.
Not normally our recording day. We had actually recorded our last...
International
conversation last week on Thursday when I was still in France.
But that was
a struggle. There was just there. Oddly, for the first time, we had not huge things, but sort of like this series of technical difficulties or environmental. I mean, the internet kept freezing, so there was delay in our conversation. Bear suddenly halfway through decided he needed to make a fort out of pillows. There's like there were like all of these things that started to add up to, for the first time, we thought, okay, maybe we need to re-record.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a decision we made, and we're like, okay, well, we're going to be in person anyway, so let's do it. And then now here we are in person, and...
A few days have passed.
Yes.
With significant events in the world, mm-hmm. but particularly for us here at home, for those of you that don't know, we live in New York City. And so being back in America
with the events that transpired in Charlottesville, Virginia, mm-hmm. And then subsequent, I'm going to say non-statement by our leadership,
mm-hmm.
Is troubling.
Really troubling.
And troubling to us. And so the reason we're bringing it up is here we are supposed to record an episode on our podcast, which is about yoga and living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you really said it well when you said this is, you know, this is part of our living right now.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about it.
Yeah, for me it was really hard to, you know, the topic that we discussed we'll come back to at some point, but it felt false really to pretend that we're not living in this time frame and that these events aren't happening.
Yeah.
And you know, when I first was thinking about it, I, you know, my thoughts were roiling a little, and I thought, well, I don't have an answer, you know,
yeah.
And yet that's what this, we have committed to having a conversation. And so to be able to, and I think that one of the most vital things right now is to be able to continue to have, conversation that we cannot be silent and we cannot, pretend that we are not living in these circumstances, that this is not happening, that, and part of how we have got to this place, in my personal opinion, is that there has been the ability to either willfully or unconsciously be unaware of, or to push aside, you know, whether we were unconsciously unaware or whether we chose to turn away from or push aside, you know, it's not like what's arising right now is new.
Correct.
It's
exactly.
Arising and it needs to be seen and it needs to be addressed. And
I think that's the really clear thing. And I guess the thing that's coming to me right now and what you're saying, and I think is worth noting, is that both you and I are white females.
Mm-hmm.
And the... you know, the ability to push something aside comes from our place of privilege. So
absolutely.
And I'm sorry, I know that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I just want to acknowledge that we understand that. And I think what we're saying right now is that, you know, it shouldn't be ignored. It can't be ignored. We've been having conversations about this for a long time where you and I feel the need to speak out about things like mm-hmm. this and no longer just push things aside.
Yeah, this morning...
Just because we're able to. How
right.
How terrible that we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I was sort of working on processing a little this morning, I made a joke about this a little while ago. There's always two things. But there were a couple of things that
you
came
do.
To
you
me.
You always have two things.
I always have two things. Okay, there were a couple of things that came to me. One was, for some reason, I had the thought, you need to pull out, look up on the computer, you have somewhere a Sweatshop Union song you need to hear. And like, literally, this is an album that was given to me in like 2003.
Okay.
This Canadian band that one of my dear friends had the opportunity to work with. And so, and I didn't even know why. And I started listening through, and one of the songs had a lyric in it that said, "I cannot be free as long as you are in prison." That is so true, that we cannot continue to take advantage of, even if we didn't recognize it, we have for so long, I have for so long lived in a system of privilege that I didn't even necessarily know. Mm-hmm. And that has to change. Those things need to shift. And so that came to me. And then I also had this moment of real frustration, because we do this podcast to talk about how yogic philosophy and our practices come forward in our living.
Yes.
And the text that's been forefront in my brain, that's come up a lot in our conversations in the last few weeks, has been the Yoga Sutras, because, you know, we were literally in the middle of lecturing on them. And when we look at the path, the map that's set out in that text, so the first chapter basically defines, from Patanjali's perspective in the Ashtanga, the eight-limbed path, what yoga is, mm-hmm. and some of what you hope to achieve or receive, you know, what the benefit of that practice might be. And then the second pada or chapter is giving you the recipe, the map, the tools,
right?
Literally, yeah. In order to walk that path. And you know, the first limb are the yamas, the restraints that are about how we are to deal with others in the world. Mm-hmm. And the first yama is ahimsa, which is non-harming. But I got really mad when I thought about that this morning, because it doesn't tell us what to do. It tells us what not to do. Mm. Non-harming. Not how to be kind.
Right.
Right? And so, and it's, there's an aspect of it that so often we look at it as beautiful, because in yoga, it doesn't define what your experience is. It doesn't define who you should be. It gives you a path to find yourself. And so it felt so unspecific. Like, in a place of not knowing, I was like, oh, so fascinating.
Well, I think that so often, and I will say that these questions have come up from students like more and more over the last year, as we were dealing with hate rhetoric in the mainstream, is what I'll say. You know, whether it was from our president or from others in that circle, or just in the general environment, this practice somehow seemed inadequate to face it. Because it is so focused and on getting you to helping you to know yourself better. Mm. Not necessarily this is how you behave in the world, more about this is how you get to know yourself deeper, which is just like, I think the reason why we have this podcast is we're both so in love with this journey. Mm-hmm. We, you know, of walking it, of teaching it, like it's so powerful, and we see everything that it can offer. But I know that I, in these specific types of situations, I think I've run up against this, what feels like a limitation as well. Yes, we have this practice and it inherently changes the way we behave in the world because, you know, by working on ourselves, we've discussed this before, you therefore gain a wider perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it does make it easier to interact in the world around you without reacting and more responding. So there is that. You're able, but at the same time, that actually means that you're able to take more in, and if all of your seeing is this in deep injustice, then again, you feel helpless. And I think it's just like fast and furious coming to me. I think that the other thing that comes up in this practice a lot, and I have something in mind that I do almost an answer. I have something that I think can guide us in the right direction, but I also want to acknowledge that so often we hear the phrase, heal yourself to heal the world. Mm. And I'm a big believer in that, actually. Like, I think in certain instances, it's becoming inadequate, though. Heal yourself to heal the world. By changing yourself, you start to shift the immediate world around you, which then that starts to spiral out. I believe that. I've seen that. I know that it's true. But at what point does only working on yourself become not enough?
Yeah. What came to mind as you were talking was, and really the source of my reactionary frustration, is again, in so many ways, the beauty, because in getting to know ourselves, then we have to respond as ourselves. So yoga doesn't provide the answer because we are responsible.
Yeah.
Right? And if, you know, so many times, the paths that we follow to self-betterment are an external imposition. When we follow rules, you know, these are the guidelines of what I should or should not do. Mm-hmm. Then it's not an internalized value system. I watch this a lot. I went to university in an environment where there was a code of conduct expected by the school. Mm-hmm. And I was very blessed that my parents taught me to make decisions, and you know, when I was little, they were obviously controlled choices, and then the limitations on my choices were loosened, mm-hmm. as I got older, right? You can choose between this and this, and then it became, you know, like you have choices to make.
Yeah.
And my father, you know, modeled for me a lot that my opinion was important. But it was only one of the things that he took into account when he made his decisions. And that in turn, you know, his opinion, my mother's opinion, others' opinions should be important, people that we trust who are wise. But they are only things to take into account, and that I must make my own decision and then take responsibility for my choices. Mm-hmm. So when I went into that environment of watching this, you know, externalized value system, I watched so many, you know, obviously this is a generalization, but what I witnessed a lot was, can I get across the line and back without getting caught, right? So push the externalized rule, or allowing the externalized rule to be one's backbone, so that if you're no longer in an environment where some externalized higher power is telling you the rules, if there isn't something to obey, then one becomes lost because the decision can't be made on their own, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so, but yoga doesn't give us that. It gives us guidelines, but it doesn't give us a list of rules to follow. It makes us get to know ourselves and then be responsible for our choices. And so, you know, we do walk around in this world, particularly as householders. We're not closeted in an ashram somewhere or in a monastery where, you know, we are not connected, and where we are only interacting with the world on an energetic level, right? Because that's the idea, if the energy within me is, if it's all one energy, then, you know, there is that exchange. And I, like you, I wholeheartedly believe that. But we do walk around in this world. Mm-hmm. And so as we start to get to know ourselves better, we have to determine how that living happens. Like, it's everything, right? And that means deciding when and how and where we engage, and then taking responsibility for either action or inaction, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Taking responsibility. I think I absolutely agree. You're right. It does so clearly do that.
In these moments of feeling lost, it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
Right? Because
you want to look to your system, this thing you've relied on, to help you along your journey, to help you some more.
And it has.
Yeah.
But now we have to carry it forward, right? Yeah. Its only promise was to make us our most vibrant and potent selves. Mm-hmm. Right? But that means we have to live as that self. And what does that self do?
Yeah. Yeah. So is the answer here just really listening to yourself? And if you feel called to demonstrate, listen to that. If you feel called to stage a meditation protest, if you feel called to do whatever it is that you feel called to, however it is you feel called to take action, whether it's from your home or going someplace in person, is it about really being true to that thing inside that's telling you that that's what you should do, your conscience? Is it about being true to that and not suppressing it and not saying, oh, I don't want to stir the waters or ruffle any feathers by my actions, but if you feel called to take action, you should take action.
Yeah. I think we have to be willing to stand by our decisions and whatever they are.
Yeah.
And so those moments, if we choose stillness or if we choose not to engage in a particular event because we need to do something else, we need to own those things too. Yeah. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, you know, mm-hmm. but that we need to be willing to stand.
Yeah.
I mean, what is yoga but taking a position, right? Asana means seat more than it means posture.
Mm-hmm.
And that we need to dig in and be ourselves from where we are. And that can encompass a whole array, but it cannot be ignorance.
No.
It cannot be delusion. And, you know, you said something earlier that was about we take more in.
Yeah.
Right? There's this heightened sense of awareness. And I ran across a quote the other day that was that said something. I think it was Yeats, but I could be wrong. the world is full of magic. It's just waiting for our senses to be potent enough to pick it up. You know, so as we start to increase our ability to perceive physical senses, energetic, spiritual, and all of those levels, we take more in.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to take it on. You know, we can channel or be a vessel or a transformer or whatever. But we become more and more aware, not less aware.
Absolutely. I think it's worth just kind of elaborating on what you just said, that we don't have to take it on. This is what I think you're saying by that. We don't have to change our emotional state. We don't have to become this other thing. We can continue to just process through.
Yeah, I mean, even when we are... I had this conversation with someone recently. When you start to move into, you know, healing modalities,
mm-hmm.
that sometimes mm-hmm. what happens is that people take on the energetic quality of the other individual and then start to bear it
mm-hmm.
instead of be a conduit. So, you know, providing technique or service or care that starts to change the energetic quality of the individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we are so blessed as to start to, you know, help someone's suffering move out of them. But that doesn't mean we have to hold that suffering.
Yeah.
The suffering can be, you know, passed through. I say a channel rather than a vessel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mm-hmm. that's that is hard. That goes back to, you know, what you created last fall, self-care for the resistance.
Yeah.
Right? Starting to, you know, in this action, we continue to take care of the self so that we can continue to take action so that we continue to take care of the self. You know, like...
Absolutely. Make self-care a part of what you're doing. Like, it's not... Don't let it be an afterthought. It's actually a vital part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Another thing that what you were saying brought up for me was not shying away from feeling your own emotion. Mm-hmm. I think so often, you know, sometimes we think that yoga is only about feeling good emotions or only about feeling good. And then, you know, we also have, it's actually about feeling good and bad and respond, being able to respond. I'm going to use the word equanimity. And the reason why I'm using it is because there's a Yoga Sutra that actually does kind of guide us towards potentially how we do deal with situations like this. So if I think, again, looking back at the self, when we can come to dealing with our highest emotions and our lowest emotions, our highest experiences and our most challenging experiences with some kind of lens of equanimity, that's when we take that practice then out into the world. But I think so often, and I know I've had this experience, that sometimes gets misinterpreted as I shouldn't be feeling anything. I should be numb. And that's not it. There's a difference between numbness and discernment.
Well, yeah, absolutely. To me, numbness goes back to denial. Mm-hmm. Numbness is living inside of my privilege and pretending that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is numbness, you know, and I know that I've talked about this before, that we, exactly what you just said,
we're supposed to be like...
Oh my gosh, that was the best. We think we're supposed to be like numb up, right?
Exactly.
And it's reminding me of some writings of, I think, 9th century philosopher Abhinavagupta, and that he defined these 9 rasas, which rasa means like flavors,
okay,
of emotion. And from that, the phrase for me that has helped me understand is freedom in emotion, not from emotion. That unattachment is freedom in emotion, not from emotion. That we are not separate, but we are not defined by them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about this in a recent episode where I wish we would learn from, you know, I spent the last 4 weeks surrounded by French.
Mm.
And I wish that we would learn from the way they speak about these things, because they say, I have, not I am.
Mm.
I have hunger. I have anger. I have. And that's so helpful, like just so inherent in our language. Unconsciously, we keep defining ourselves. I am this thing. I am happy. I am sadness. No, we have them. Yeah. And then we don't have them anymore. They are allowed to flow and change, and that the steadiness is one being true and to the self, not that we don't have an emotional state.
Right.
And so there can be reaction. There can be an inspiration to action from these things. It is in discontentment. Sure. Are we seeking contentment? Yes. Right? Santosha. That there's this quality of contentment. In fact, contentment is looked at in the sutras as being beyond happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because happiness is circumstantial and fleeting. That contentment is a state that's way beyond. But that discontent or, you know, these emotions inspire us to make something other than it is. That if we are only in contentment, then we will remain. There will be no change.
Hmm.
So how can we then let it take action? Like perhaps it too becomes the wind at one's back in terms of looking at the Purush Arthas. What is the impetus, the desire to take action, to move towards our most highest self, does that not also include how we interact with the world? If it's true that there is no other, right? How should I deal with others? There is no other. Then I must engage, perhaps, too, mm-hmm. right? Then it's true, I cannot be free as long as you are in prison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do you know the sutra that I'm speaking of off of the top of your head, or?
Oh, the one about equanimity?
Well, I know the number, and I just don't know the 33rd sutra of the first pada.
No, but I can get it really quickly.
Okay. Just because I think that it's important to have that guideline. I think it helps us, it's saying that this is, I mean, look, we've talked about a lot of things and it kind of all comes back to equanimity, I think, that if you can behave in a way that is equal, that doesn't rile you, I think, then ultimately that's the path. But I think what we're saying is these are all, like, feeling your emotions, and there are other tools that we can use along the way helping us get to this potential state of contentment where we are acting with equanimity.
Yeah. And is it also perhaps there's the element that equanimity too might not just be, is not emotionlessness.
Right.
That can there be a contentment in the self, capital S, that doesn't mean, that is also removed from circumstance, that doesn't mean that I'm okay with how things are playing out in the world right now.
I think so.
Because that's also really, like, again, maybe equanimity doesn't mean that we don't respond to injustice, that we don't respond to racism, that we don't respond to the diminishment or the cruelty or, you know, those things that we see around us. Mm-hmm. Does equanimity have to mean that, you know, again, we're in some sort of blissful, contented state? I don't think so. I think that if we can contain it all, if we are large enough to contain opposites, then I can have some sense of being content in the self. And also enraged, discontent, motivated to action by what I witness and take responsibility for my participation in it, however clear or unconscious that might be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we started this conversation and talking about recognizing how much we have, you know, whether or not it was known or unknown, for a long time benefited from being in a place of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And that we continue to learn how that has rippled out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. How that has rippled out. We didn't realize how, yeah. I think for a long time it was unrealized. Now that it's realized, what is the action that you take how do you show your allyship? How do you take on injustice? Not just being an ally. How do you respond to... Mm. How do you respond?
Did you say 33?
I think that's the one I'm thinking of.
Okay, so this is what I have. The one I had most easily accessible to me was Raja Yoga.
Yeah.
So friendship, mercy, gladness, and indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Being thought of in regard to subjects happy, unhappy, good, and evil, respectively, pacify the citta. Citta meaning the thought, the mind, the thoughts, not, you know, the mind itself.
Right, thoughts.
This is what Vivekananda says. We must have these four sorts of ideas. We must have friendship for all. We must be merciful towards those that are in misery. When people are happy, we ought to be happy. And to the wicked, we must be indifferent. So with all subjects that come before us, if the subject is a good one, we shall feel friendly towards it. If the subject of thought is one that is miserable, we must be merciful towards it. If it is good, we must be glad. If it is evil, we must be indifferent. These attitudes of the mind towards the different subjects that come before it will make the mind peaceful. Most of our difficulties in our daily lives come from being unable to hold our minds in this way. For instance, if a man does evil to us, instantly we want to react evil. And every reaction of evil shows that we are not able to hold the citta down. It comes out in waves toward the object and we lose our power. Every reaction in the form of hatred or evil is so much lost to the mind. And every evil thought or deed of hatred or any thought of reaction, if it is controlled, will be laid in our favor. It is not that we lose by thus restraining ourselves. We are gaining infinitely more than we suspect. Each time we suppress hatred or a feeling of anger, it is so much good energy stored up in our favor that piece of energy will be converted into the higher powers.
Hmm.
This is one that's come up, yeah, before, that this indifferent to the wicked, right?
Yes, that specifically. I think that that's a little bit kind of almost negated what we said about, you know, talking about like suppressing this action of hatred, not necessarily the thought of hatred, but the action of hatred. So, you know, I still feel like feeling your emotions is utmost importance.
Yeah, I think I didn't take it to, as that. I more took it like a lot of times when we feel injustice, we want to lash back.
Right, exactly.
Right, and so it's not so much suppression to me is actually a form of attachment. If we don't allow the emotion, then it remains.
Mm-hmm.
Starts to boil or fester underneath, mm-hmm. and then our energy, mm-hmm. and also our spirit becomes embroiled in that thing, right? So we are wasting our energy in pushing it down or in denial, and we start to be eaten by that, as opposed to, you know, the release of it, that even sometimes just acknowledging it, right?
Yeah.
Dissipates something. Yeah. And so that, but in that acknowledgement, right, responding in kind is not beneficial. We, you know, receiving an act of hate and responding with an act of hate.
I think,
but that actually doesn't imply no response.
Right, exactly. And I think it comes back to kind of what you were saying, allowing this knowledge that you're taking in to be the inspiration for action.
Mm-hmm.
Take this in with indifference. Take this in, this wickedness that you see. But then how do you respond?
Yeah, take it in, not take it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Perhaps, like, is that concept of indifference similar to what I was saying as being the channel rather than the vessel, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to hold on to this. I'm going to release, transform, right? Can I be the alchemy,
mm-hmm.
that turns this into something else?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there are so many ways in which we can respond and ways in which we see people responding And I guess I want to, like, none of the ways that we see people responding to this injustice are wrong. But the way that we respond as yogis needs to be true to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right? I the only reason I say that is because I don't want to discredit anything that anybody's doing, because I think it's all pushing everything towards its peak, maybe. Like, it's pushing things forward. This fight has to keep happening. It has to keep going. If things are going to keep escalating from one side, we need to respond. And I think that I don't want to discredit what other people are doing, but I think that this conversation is just, how do we, as people who are practicing yoga, what's our step? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I it's individual too. That's the whole point. It's, you know, using this practice and then being responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking through that with me.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you brought it up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is, we always say at the end, we want to have an ongoing dialogue, but obviously this is an ongoing dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have answers, but we want to continue to move through and find a way together. You know, us together, yeah. But also yeah. as a collective. Mm-hmm. And I'm deeply grateful to for those listening, for being willing to listen, for allowing us to space to go through this process and then sharing our process, you know,
yeah.
with us.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for this community, for the way that you support us. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
Yeah, really amazing.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. We hope to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back next week. So, again, recording in person.
Yay!
Forgot how much I missed this. Until next time.
Until next time.
Dhanyavaad.